Hi, I'm Jim Pinto on Legends of Tabletop.
Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop,
creating legends one die at a time.
Welcome to Legends of Tabletop. This is Leah Bond, and you're with Post World Games?
Yeah, that's in my little imprint.
Excellent. And you tell us about your Kickstarter. That's what brought you here today.
I'm doing a Kickstarter for a game called King of Storms. It's one of five games in the Kickstarter, so the other games come out as stretch goals. Four of them are out now. Four of them are unlocked, and so when we get to 10K, we unlock the last one. They're all done, so it's just a matter of getting enough funding so that I can pay the artist for the art, and I can print the books and ship them out to everybody.
Excellent. Now, I noticed on your Kickstarter itself, could you tell me about what you mean when you say GM-less game?
Yeah, I've really fallen in love with the GM-less model. In the last, say, 10 years, I've been making lots of games using various mechanics, but all sort of borrowing the idea of scene framing. So if you're sitting down and you're playing a game with a game master, which is what you're used to, a traditional game, somebody is framing a scene, and then the players are playing within that scene. So you're at the tavern, and there's three people up at the bar, and there's a wizard in the corner, and the three of you are sitting at a table waiting for your drinks to be taken. That's framing a scene. And people are used to that when the game master feeds them that information. What makes them uncomfortable at a GM-less game is that they are now responsible. There's no one person in authority. Somebody is responsible for coming up with that scene and then people playing off of it. And then the next scene being sort of improv based on what just happened. And once you do it a little bit, you get good at it very fast. A lot of it is art and not science, just like it was when we were first learning to play D&D. We didn't know what we were doing the very first time we sat down to play D&D, and so it took us a long time to learn to play it well.
That's true. But yeah, you touched on that a little bit as well, leading into this, that your Kickstarter promised to deliver mini games that are already completed.
Yeah.
As I previously stated, that many times the Kickstarters will take quite a while to deliver, and some of them are iffy at best.
Well, I have a completed PDF. It's 94 pages for each game. I mean, I'm happy to show people if they really don't believe the games are done or if they're questionable.
Oh, I believe that they are.
But they're all done. They've all been tested and played more than once, some of them several times, and some of them are weird, and they're purposely weird, and I'm okay with that. I think if you're buying the weird one and then you walk away and say, oh, that was weird as a complaint, then you weren't paying attention. But the best one seems to be the science fiction one, Odin's Eye. That's the one everybody seems to be really excited about, and that seems to be the one that we've had the best sessions of.
Okay. What's the setting of Odin's Eye?
Odin's Eye is a science fiction search and rescue game. I did one of those for my Protocol series a while ago called Joan of Arc, so I wanted to do sort of a spiritual successor to that or a cousin game to that with Praxis. And so this one is about a beacon going off on a planet, and the players have to go down and find out what's going on with the beacon. And every game I've run with it has been different and really deep. These are rich games. I don't want to say dark. People always say dark when they mean deep or rich. So I think these games are producing, especially this one, are producing rich game experiences that you wouldn't normally get if you were just sitting down to kill some orcs.
Speaking of, I saw just a very brief mention of Goblin Protocol. And
yes.
I like the setting that you have made for that and what I managed to pick up in just the very brief skimming of the webpage of the various layers of goblin nobility.
Yes.
And that was really intriguing to me. Is that somewhat present in the other four games that you already have completed for the Kickstarter?
Not really that kind of. I was going for, first of all, Goblin and Lady Winter are sort of a pairing of games mm-hmm. in the protocol system. They both sort of borrow upon Shakespeare's vision of Avalon or Shakespeare's vision of the dream world. And so I tried to make it a little more fairy-like, which is something I don't normally write. I tend to write grittier, more anthropological, gutter punk fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so with this, I was going for something a little lighter and mystical, if you will. And so when I went and did the Praxis game, when I did the fantasy game in that, I went in the direction of Sandman or Neil Gaiman's fantasy works, where things aren't what they seem, and things don't add up immediately when you see them. If you have a character that's a mule skinner and the character that's a lamplighter, why are they hanging out together? What possible reason would I want to play either of those characters when I'm used to playing a barbarian or a sorcerer? And those characters don't exist in the fantasy one I've done for the Praxis series, which is called, I'm drawing a blank on the name of my own game. It's called The Black Monk. I wanted to say Of the Flesh, but that's the zombie one. Mm-hmm. The Black Monk is the last one in the series. It's the one that hasn't unlocked yet. But it's... Darren Pierce and I are actually talking about turning it into a full-fledged game once the Kickstarter's over and doing yet another project with it so people can play a longer campaign in that setting.
Okay, yeah, I did see that as a stretch goal, and I thought that was really cool about the Black Monk.
The Black Monk.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really fun. And now I am. Oh yeah, and I see that you have had a few Kickstarters in your past. And would you care to talk about those? And also, where can we find your current Kickstarter? Remind us, please.
Well, it's Kickstarter King of Storms is the present one that's running. And you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my own website, Post World Games, and there's links to all this stuff. This is my 14th, I think, Kickstarter, plus okay. some other ones that I've helped other people run with their companies. So, and I've done graphics a bunch for people's Kickstarter. So maybe I'm in the neighborhood of 20 now.
Oh wow!
Kickstarters that I've been involved with. All of mine at Post World Games have always funded and always delivered. I'm behind on two of them, so everybody's been updated as to what's going on, and it's just a matter of waiting for art or, you know, little niggling things like I'm still writing, I'm still coming up with ideas, I want to make it perfect.
Of course. And also with the art, so tell me about the art that you do. Do you do art that eventually ends up in these completed projects?
You're breaking up, I'm sorry.
Do you do the artwork that sometimes shows up in the completed projects?
I will sometimes draw. I can't draw very well. I'm a writer, and I really wish I could draw. But I'll doodle some things here and there, and I'll make some little graphic bangles or something to fill a space if it's necessary. Mm-hmm. I'm really good at grungy page edges and that sort of thing. That's what my strength is as a graphic designer. But my focus is on writing. I sold a cover. I actually painted a cover recently and sold it to somebody. I don't know if that book is out, but
oh,
painted a book cover.
Are you allowed to say where that might be?
I honestly do not remember the name of the project. It was something about weapons.
Okay.
I couldn't even tell you who bought it from me. It was a while ago. It was just sitting in. It was a pile. It was sitting in my pile of things that I painted, and somebody mm-hmm. wanted to buy it, and so I let them have it.
Excellent. Now, do your games revolve around the... Oh, wait, no, we already went over that. If your games revolved around the tabletop dynamic, but yeah. Are there cards involved, and have you ever designed an experience around both card and board games, or are you specifically one over the other, or do you integrate the two?
I love designing with cards. Protocol uses a deck of poker cards. Praxis uses them a little bit. I actually have a game coming called Heaven's Collapse where the whole thing is played with a deck of cards. And I've been brainstorming a role-playing board game hybrid, but I don't want to copy what people have done already. I want to make sure that mine that mine's mine. That mine fits my design. My design philosophies. So. But yeah, I love the concept. I love the idea of mixing cards with role-playing.
Yeah, my first experience with mixing card and board would have to be Arkham Horror long time ago. The extended goal of developing a game for the person that backs it. I saw, was that yours that I saw that extended goal for on your Kickstarter?
There's a reward tier. It's not a extended goal. There's a
extended goal.
Yeah. So somebody can pay $1,000, and I'll make a one of a kind game for them. They'll have the one copy of it. It'll use the Praxis system, but they'll even have their own unique card. If they don't want unique card, I think the next level down is 500 to get a game of your choosing. But yeah, I like the idea of making a one-of-a-kind game for somebody. I was really surprised and impressed by the Cult RPG when they did the one-of-a-kind books, but the interior of the book was going to be the same, and so when I saw that one-of-a-kind cover, I said, well, I want to take it to the next level, and I want to do a one-of-a-kind game for somebody.
Now, are you talking about the one that's based on Clive Barker's worlds?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, man.
That was so pretty.
That's one I never got to play, and I wanted to so badly. Now, you'll have to forgive me if I start to sound a little bit dicey. I think the rain has started to come down here. We're in the middle of a storm, but that's all right. Now, Dice Crawl. Tell me about Dice Crawl.
Dice Crawl is a gimmicky little board game I made a few years ago. I actually designed it, I want to say, 8 years ago, and it was just sitting in my pile of games that I designed, and I said, okay, I guess it's time to publish this. It's basically Yahtzee dungeon crawling. I don't really like rolling a lot of dice, but I know people do, so I wanted to make a game that rolls dice that they would like and I would like, and so you're just trying to make your way to the center of a dungeon and you're rolling dice to beat monsters, but it's very abstract as opposed to Descent or something else.
And that makes me think of Chainsaw Warrior for some reason. I don't know why. Probably just the cards had me thinking about Chainsaw Warrior. And
I love Chainsaw Warrior.
Yes.
You can play Dice Crawl by yourself if you wanted. There's rules for playing it by yourself, so.
Okay. Dice Crawl?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my goodness. Corsets and Goggles. Tell me about Corsets and Goggles for those of us that don't know about it, and I'm pretty sure a lot of us don't.
It's an April Fool's joke. I absolutely despise steampunk, and I had to make an April Fool's joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a hideous cover if you've seen it. My buddy Mark Quire made the logo, and I designed all the other stuff, and it's just obnoxious.
Oh, okay. So that isn't really a game at all?
No, I'm never going to make it. No. Somebody asked me if I was, too, and I felt really bad that I got somebody excited about it. No.
See, the sad thing is, I got excited not for me, but for somebody else that I knew would absolutely love it. Okay.
I am not the guy to write steampunk. I would, yeah.
Aw, see, because I wrote underneath that it's like, oh, friend, this is for you, you know, and So remind me again, which four of the five are completed and ready to go in this Kickstarter for King of Storms?
The King of Storms is, that's the first one, the Lambs, and the Lambs is only available through the Kickstarter. It has a lot of religious overtones, and I'm sure people are going to be offended, so I didn't want to put it on a bookshelf anywhere. Black Monk and Odin's Eye. Not Black Monk, Of the Flesh and Odin's Eye. Of the Flesh is the zombie one, Odin's Eye is the sci-fi one. And so the next one that unlocks is Black Monk, that's the last one.
Okay. and then that'll be all five of them. And you've managed to pull in over $8,000 for this. And the original amount for it to succeed was?
Just $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah. I always set it low so that I can do stretch goals. And I don't know. It just works better mathematically to set a lower goal. And that way people know it's going to get done rather than set an impossible goal and then you don't get funded.
Yeah, and that was part of the reason that led me to so quickly, hey, extend an invitation to you for an interview, because so often you do see Kickstarters that seem just really insurmountable. Is that really going to happen by the due date? Is that really going to be done? And you hear all these nightmares about people misappropriating the funds after they've been received, etc.
Yeah, so. I don't want to be one of those people that tries to make a $50,000 role-playing game. If I ever made $50,000, that would be great, but I want to make the games because I want to make the games. I'm not trying to become a millionaire doing this, and I think if you're in the gaming industry trying to become a millionaire, you picked the wrong hobby.
Now, speaking of, I have been rolling around an idea for a card game. One of the things that's really made a stopping point for me, it's almost a block that I need to overcome, is of the evening out. I have to make each character pretty leveled, take away some in one area and allocate more in another to make them fairly evenly matched, because I don't want to have just one character that's so grossly overpowered.
Right.
Is
that a question?
Was that a loaded question? No, it was not.
No, I was asking, is that a question? Because I didn't know what you wanted me to say there. I think a lot of people spend a lot of time worrying about game balance when they're first making a game, and I think the first thing you need to worry about is your opponent. You got to make something that's playable, that's fun, and then worry about the math later, which is how I usually approach all of my projects. And I know that there's designers that look the exact other way. They have to make sure everything's mathematically balanced before they even let somebody see it. But I want to make sure the game is fun first. And I've made plenty of games where I'll send it off to play testers and I'll say, is this fun? Does this work? They'll immediately try to break the game and send me a bunch of notes about how it's broken. And that doesn't help me at all. That's clearly people aren't listening. So you have to sit and play it yourself a lot to see what's working for you, what makes you happy, because you're the one that's going to have to demo it 200 times when it gets
Gosh. Yes.
So if you don't like playing it, you probably shouldn't continue making it.
And that takes me back to another one that I did play test, years ago, Lunch Money. God, I played that so many times. Oh, my goodness, yes. That was a very fun little game. It's a classic by now, a classic. Imagine
that. I mean, you can still find it. I think you find it at Target, can't you? I mean, it's that ubiquitous.
It didn't used to be. So you have been making games for 20 years.
Yes.
That's awesome. Now, briefly, before we started this broadcast, you had said something about a number of games that you had a hand in.
My very first thing I ever wrote for the gaming industry, I worked on Shadeless Magazine, and then after that went away, I started writing for both the 7C role-playing game and the L5R role-playing game, Legend of the Five Rings. And my first book that I ever had published was for Legend of the Five Rings. It was an advice book for game masters. And that actually did really well for the company, and it got nominated for an Origins Award, which was nice. I didn't win. And then from there, I went on to do a couple of little adventures for L5R, some more material for 7C. I became the art director for the company. I then took over the D20 line when everybody was doing a third edition splat book, I was part of that writing these books, these one-word topic books, like Dungeons and Evil and Wilderness and so on. I think Mercenaries was the best one we did. And so, yeah, I've been, I don't even know how many years, I mean, I was there just cranking out material and doing books, but I was art directing all the CCGs that we were working on and everything else.
So, what, yeah, CCGs? Before
I was doing all that.
What CCGs?
What CCGs? Seventh Sea, Spycraft, Warlord, Legend of the Five Rings, touched a little bit on that one called Humalians. I really didn't do much with it, but I, you know, it came through the company. And then I left right before we started working on that one for the City of Heroes. So I wasn't there for City of Heroes. I don't know how that turned out. And I was there when we did the race car Initial D, but I didn't do anything for that either. I just was, I helped play test it a little bit, but that was it.
But, okay. Oh man. Now I've gone off thought with the peal of thunder above. So corsets and goggles was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
How many days do you have left on your Kickstarter?
20. I think 20.
Wow.
Yeah. It only just started.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It had been, I think I was sent a screenshot of you talking about your Kickstarter on Facebook with someone, and it had been up for a matter of hours.
Oh.
And you had already generated enough to call it a success. And I had no choice. I mean, I was sent that, hey, why don't you interview this guy? Okay, I'll interview Jim Pinto. That would be great.
You did draw the shortest straw.
No, I didn't.
You did. You got stuck with me. It's fine. You can say it. You got stuck with me.
No, I did not get stuck with you. It was actually someone that was not part of Legends of Tabletop that had sent me the screenshot and was like, hey, you know, you should check this out. Right. And so then, of course, I have. Very minutely, and I apologize for my lack of preparation.
That's fine.
Okay. So it should take about 3 hours to complete your game. Any one of the five?
Yeah, if you rush, you can be done in two, and if you really take your time, you can play as long as six. Right.
Okay.
It just depends on your play style and the table. And mm-hmm. There's three different ways to end the game. You can make the game go really long by choosing only one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then if you have a game master can drag it out for several sessions, because the book also comes with rules on how to run the game with a game master. So it's not clearly only GMless, this particular game.
Okay. Now, it's just that one particular game, the King of Storms?
No, all of them. All of them use the
same
game.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's if... It's not just specifically meant to be for one person. It can be for up to three or four people. If someone's tired of running, they can go ahead and play this with others. Am I correct?
Oh, okay. I guess I'm seeing some confusion. You think it's, when you say one person, are you saying solo?
Solo, yes.
No, it's not a solo game. It's for,
okay.
It's for four to six people. It plays best with four or five. But we've done a six-player game, and it's great. I don't want to do any more than that. It'll slow down play. But, it's not a solo game. It would be a horrible solo game.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's why I brought up Chainsaw Warrior and, you know, what was it, Alone on Halloween, that Chaosium did way back, and some others. Who?
I was just saying, now I understand. I get it now. I understand how the game works all over.
Okay. I apologize.
That's okay.
I just see GMless, and then that makes me think, oh, no GM. Must be, like, two people, maybe, if there's two. So, no.
No. It's four to six, and you all take turns being the in control, being the director, framing scenes, for people to play in. And there's rules for all the different kinds of scenes. So there's not just... There's scenes with just two people in them. There's scenes with everybody in them. There's scenes with nobody in them where you're just describing some mood or whatever. So, yeah, no, the game does a... The game holds your hand through all of that and teaches you how to do it.
Excellent. So that'd be great for someone like me that's running her first Call of Cthulhu scenario.
Right.
So, oh, man. Let's see. So 4 to 6 people.
Yes.
Are there any age restrictions, or are they specifically meant for people that have a better knowledge of the world around them?
The themes that are tackled are not for children. I wouldn't
do
movies with kids. And, you know, in the examples, I talk about sex, or I use vulgarity if that's what a character is supposed to do. So I explicitly say that in the opening page, that this isn't for children. That said, if your kids are mature, you know, feel free to play this game with them. But I think playing a zombie that's trying to become human again probably isn't for kids.
No. No, I don't think that would be. I don't want this to be like pulling teeth, and I apologize. Again, that is my problem, because I did not do much preparation for this other than just glancing over your Kickstarter.
That's okay. We can cut whenever you want to cut. I mean,
no, it's quite all right. It's quite all right. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and jump into something called the Final Five. And
okay.
I know this is fairly early, and I hope you'll forgive me, John. Let's see. Which do you prefer, video games or tabletop?
Tabletop, absolutely.
Okay. Would you care to expound on that?
Sure. I think video games, everybody tries to make what they call story video games, or they try to say that there's stories in video games, and I don't think that there's any choices in those stories in video games. You're just experiencing the story they want you to experience. I think if you sit down at a tabletop with your friends, the minute you make that first decision to go left or right in a dungeon, or not take the wizard's scroll, or, you know, go to Antarctica when you were supposed to go to Portugal in a pulp game, I think as soon as you make those kind of decisions, the story is yours now. You own that story, and you own the responsibility and the repercussions of that story. When you're playing a video game, those options aren't available. Even if you're playing Knights of the Old Republic, even if you're playing the Walking Dead game, and I love both of those video games. I love Mass Effect. The decisions you make don't really split the story or fork the story the way a role-playing game can, and the way only a role-playing game can. Even Choose Your Adventure books had a limited number of forks in them. Mm-hmm. And sitting down to play a role-playing game, it's yours. You own that story.
Yes. And that's quite true. Going on to question number 2, Star Wars or Star Trek? And why?
I don't like either of them.
Oh!
If I had to pick, I guess Star Wars because of Episode 5, but that's about it. Yeah, I don't. I've only seen the Star Trek movies. I've never seen a single episode of the television show, so I don't really know anything about it. Some things.
Okay, so for a gentleman of your caliber, I shall add another option: Dune.
Oh, Dune! Absolutely. Oh man, yeah. I think it's almost high bar literature. And if it weren't about outer space, Dune would be more highly regarded outside of the genre, the canon of genre science fiction, if you will.
Man, having just gone to Worldcon on Friday.
Yeah.
I definitely thumbs up your response, sir. Fine response, sir. So anyway, if you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, well, I have to tell why. I always wanted to be invisible, and I think that kind of plays into my privacy online. I mean, I don't like attention, so I think invisibility always attracted me. But then Nightcrawler came out when I was a kid reading X-Men, and teleportation was all of a sudden a thing. And so I was always torn between those two. I think as an adult, I probably would still want invisibility, but as a kid, I wanted teleportation because you could get away with being bad and then just disappear. But invisibility, I could just be left alone. I could go into public and be left alone and still do my thing.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
Okay.
I could never get my head around DC. I don't know what the point of it was. Marvel was very clearly about the people and their problems. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man certainly was attractive to me as a teenager because here's a teenage boy going through a bunch of high school problems, and he's got to deal with them the same way I would. So you could instantly relate with Spider-Man. I can't relate with Superman or Green Lantern or Wonder Woman or Aquaman. They're about solving these impossibly stupid problems that nobody would ever have to deal with, and then they solve them with impossibly stupid powers. So it just adds on to itself as being silly. DC never struck, and now DC wants to be serious. All their movies and comics are now becoming more serious and more grown up, when for 50 years they were tongue-in-cheek bubblegum silliness. So I don't know what DC's supposed to be. I couldn't pick two superheroes out of a lineup for DC.
Yeah. Well, sci-fi or fantasy?
Fantasy, absolutely. Almost everything I write is fantasy. I've only written a couple of science fiction games. I fell into the hobby through Dungeons & Dragons. I saw Beastmaster before I saw any other fantasy movie. Before I'd ever read even a fantasy book. So my experience with it was always this sort of gritty, semi-gritty realism. The world of Beastmaster looked gritty to me when I was 9 years old, I think it was, when it came out.
Yeah. They had that on the public, on the air, on rotation for how many years?
I own it, so I can watch it whenever I want, and that's quite a bit.
Yeah, that is one of those classics that kind of, I've relegated Chronicles of Riddick to that. It's like it can just go in the background, and it's acceptable background.
Which one was Chronicles of Riddick? Was that the one where he's on the planet by himself being hunted?
The Chronicles of Riddick was when he was with the little gal that had been. He went to the prison world and had to escape from that too.
Right. So okay.
That's the second one.
Yeah. Okay. I've only seen it the one time. I can't remember. I love the first one, the night at Pitch Black.
Pitch Black, yep.
I love Pitch Black.
Yeah, I have that one somewhere. I just need to look for it. I think it's in the depths of my basement.
But your favorite is Chronicles of Riddick.
The second one, yeah, it's just one that I can have going in the background and it's acceptable. I mean, that's pretty much like Beastmaster was during my childhood and later adolescence, that, and then the late night airings of Heavy Metal, the cartoon, the animated feature. It was great. Yeah. Loved it. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about your Kickstarters, and remind us all again where we can find your Kickstarter and your games.
My games are on postworldgames.com and drivethrough.com, drivethrughrpg.com. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter. The Kickstarter's on Kickstarter as King of Storms. I think that's everywhere. I'm not on Instagram or Snapchat or anything, so I keep my social media limited, and I really just talk about what I'm making.
Okay. That sounds fantastic. Now, you only write games? Do you write any fiction at all?
I have a novel coming in 2 months, actually. It's a horror western. It's called Deathwind. So that's coming out in September. It's all done. It's been edited. We put the cover on it. So
it's called Deathwind?
Deathwind, yeah. It happens right after Wounded Knee, and mm-hmm. so the Lakota are on the reservation outside of this small town called White Pines, Nebraska. That's not on any maps anymore, but we did our homework. My buddy Travis and I wrote the novel. We did our homework. We researched. The two people, main characters, are based on real people that lived in White Pines at the time. And we wrote a story about what if there were these ghastly occult murders going on in the area, how would these people deal with this? And so, yeah, the novel will be out in 2 months.
Excellent. So 2 months. What publisher should we look for?
Oh, my God. I can't believe you just pinned me down to that. It's Fire. I always forget the name. It's Fire Press.
Okay.
It always appears on my screen as its initials. And so Fire Press.
Okay. And you'll be advertising that on your Facebook as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll keep us all in the know about that. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate all of the time that you've given to us today. And
no
with
problem.
That, I'm going to sign off.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.